My poor wife, I have to run an awful lot of things by her, you know, things that I think about doing here, and she unfortunately has to hear a lot of that stuff, and she graciously nods her head a lot of times. Sometimes she says, no, don't go there, but I thank her that I run a lot of things by her. And today we were talking a little bit, and I said, you know, you're kind of in a dilemma when you're doing this, and you know, I'm relatively new at this, and one of the difficulties is, you know, as you think about topics that we would talk about that last more than a week, you know, it's easy for me because I'm in it every day and I'm reading through stuff and thinking about stuff and studying things. And it's easy for me to kind of keep the continuity going through the 2 or 3 weeks that we would be talking about something. But I think, gosh, it's kind of hard for, you know, people that are there listening, because they're not in it every day. They're here for, you know, 20 or 25 minutes to hear it, and it's easy to lose that continuity. And how do you do that? That was the question that was we were kind of mulling through a little bit this morning. We were having breakfast, and especially this one. This is the topic that we're talking about here the last couple of weeks and into next week, that, you know, it's hard maybe just to hear today's sermon and kind of miss the other pieces that tie into that. And I worry sometimes that could get missed. So if you're, you know, if you do miss a week, I guess that would be a great time to maybe catch our webpage, to maybe go back and maybe you can listen to a piece that might fill in the gap there a little bit. Because I worry sometimes that, well, you said that this week, but it really doesn't make sense to how it fits in with the rest of the picture. And it's kind of difficult to do that. So moral of the story, just don't miss any weeks. Just be here every week and problem is solved. But we are in this series kind of thing. We've been this our third week that we've been talking about. Kind of an extension of Christmas, you know, partly because I just like Christmas and I want to keep Christmas going as long as we can. But we started talking about really revealing and unwrapping more deeply the present that you and I have been given with Christ on that first Christmas. And it's important that we do that we do know more fully how awesome that gift is. And we know it in such a way that we can really live it out. That our lives are really a reflection of Christmas. That, you know, we have been given so much through Christ as He came as a child. But then also, how is it we can participate in the mission that He began then? How is it that we live our lives, yeah, receivers of this gift, but as participants in the kingdom that came 2,000 years ago? And how is it, as we are bearers of that present and we know it more fully, that we can share it with others that we're called to do? And it is. It is such an awesome, great gift because it's so valuable. And it is so valuable because we recognize how much we really needed it. And that's what makes the gift so valuable. You know, you think about regular gifts that we give, and you know, one of the greatest things after you give a gift is to hear the recipient of your gift make the comment, oh, that was just what I needed, and I love it. That's a great gift that's given. And I think as Christians, as followers of Christ, the more we understand what we've been given, we say just that. Man, that's just what I needed. That's just what I needed, and I love you. So we started looking at this reason, you know, why is it that we needed Him so badly? And if you remember, we went back to the beginning of our story, into that garden that we could sort of peer into just a little bit. We're no longer there. We're kept from it. But we hear stories about what things were like back in Genesis 1 and 2. But it's there where we got in this predicament that all humankind is in. Satan had a grip on things. He had a grip on all people. He had the power to keep all people away from being in communion with God, to keep them at a distance from God. And he also had a tight grip on the destiny of all people because of what happened in Genesis 3. And because of that, he also held tightly to all people being able to live life here and now most fully. And that was what was the start of this grand need that you and I and all of humankind find ourselves in. And today, if those people are away from Christ or they are far from God, they're still kept from Him by Satan, and they're still doomed, and they're still living lives that are meaningless. So we're going to spend some time going back and thinking about that horrible thing that happened in Genesis 3 and what that meant for all of people and how that makes the gift of Christmas and the gift of the cross so awesome. But it's dark. It's a dark story. Some people don't like to talk about Satan or the devil or hell or those kinds of things. A lot of churches just skip it because it's a dark, negative kind of thing. But we people who live in victory can do that because we know the other side of that. There's a comedian that I want to share with you here in a little bit that kind of has a interpretation of the devil or Satan. And this guy's old. Flip Wilson. Yeah? Flip Wilson. Some of you won't even know. I looked this up. What I'm going to show you is 50 years old. Flip Wilson was popular 50 years ago. I'm getting old. 50 years. But what this skit is about is a wife has purchased her third new dress in 1 week. And her husband wants to know, what made her do that? Why did she do that? So let's watch this.
How the devil get you to buy the dress? She said, I was going down the street and I was singing, what you say every day. And I heard the devil coming up behind me with tiptoeing. And I said to myself, I'm not going to look back because I know it's the devil. And then he sneaked up and leaned over my shoulder and said, say, mama, look at that dress in the window there. Said, it's on sale. So that's your size, too. Got a lot of flowers. You know you'd like a lot of flowers. Why don't you treat yourself to that dress? I said, cut that out, devil. I ain't buying no dresses. You better leave me alone, honey. Devil said, well, why don't you try it on? You can try it on. Rebel never know about you trying it on. It's free. They're not going to charge you nothing to try it on. You owe yourself a try on. I said, I'm not even trying it on, devil. I'm not even going to go in there and look at it. That's when the devil shoved me in the door. He said, the devil shoved me in the door. I said, cut that out, devil. And he pushed me over to where the dress was. And he threatened me. And made me try it on. Then he pulled a gun. And made me sign your name to a check. Rep said, how come the devil's always making you do something for yourself? When's the devil going to do me a favor? She said, I asked him about that. He said he did already. Devil said if it wasn't for him, you wouldn't even have a job.
So, yeah, that's a 50-year-old comedian's fun with a little bit of the understanding of the devil and his influence on a woman that just can't stay away from the dress shop. And, yeah, it's done in humor. But there's some similarities to the big battle that we talk about between good and evil, between Satan and God, between the evil forces and humankind. How did the devil get you to buy that dress was the question. And she came back and said, you know, he shoved me in the door, put a gun to my head and made me sign your name to the check. And no doubt he's doing this at stand up and it's for comedic purposes. You know, we're not supposed to glean our theology from Flip Wilson, you know, 50 years ago. We're not supposed to do that. Because the issue that he's talking about, it really is. It is a serious, very serious issue today in our lives in 2020. And the consequences of this ongoing battle are very big. So let's go back. Let's look at the real story, why we do some things that we know we just should not be doing. She knew she probably shouldn't have been buying that dress. Well, bigger than that, let's go back to Genesis 3 in the first verse and delve into this, why this works this way. Verse 1 says, now the serpent was more crafty than any other wild animal that the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, did God say you shall not eat from any tree in the garden? The woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that's in the middle of the garden, nor shall you touch it, or you shall die. But the serpent said to the woman, you will not die, For God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Now remember, we're in this perfect, good place that God has made. There's no death, no decay, no problems. The first humans were created to live forever. They could also eat from the tree of life, which would allow them immortality. That was part of this garden. They were in constant communion with God. They were cohabitating with Him in the garden. Just an awesome place to be. We can only imagine what it's like. But it's good. And then in chapter 3, we're introduced to the serpent. Now, he's called a serpent. It's not called Satan. He's not called the devil. It just says he is a serpent, one of the created beings. He was a created being. And he asks this question, which really there's nothing wrong with his first question other than it's kind of an exaggeration. Did God really say, you know, you should not eat from any tree in the garden? That was his first question. He's pushing a little bit. You know, he knows probably what the restrictions were. It's an exaggeration. Not that unlike the devil in the Flip Wilson skit. Hey, look at that dress. It's on sale. Just your size. It's got flowers on it. I know you like flowers. Just go try it on. Treat yourself to it. Not a whole lot different as he approached the woman as the serpent here approaches Eve. But it is the next verse that we know that his intentions are contrary to God. He says in verse 4, you will not die. That is a direct contradiction to what God had told Eve and Adam just a few verses before. Remember, he talked about all these trees. He put all those trees out there, trees that had different leaves and plants and fruit on them. Eat any of those you want. Except for that one. Go. You know, all of them. Choices. All kinds of freedom. Today's Sunday. I think I'm going to eat from that tree. You know, we have a lot of freedom there. Except for that one tree. And he says, but of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat it. For in the day you eat of it, you shall die. That is God talking to Adam and Eve. And now the serpent comes and contradicts that. So we know at that point that he's evil. At least he is an agent of Satan. Satan is using the serpent to accomplish his will. And he says, you know, if you eat it, these are two things that are going to happen, Eve. There's two things that are going to happen. You're going to be like God, and you're going to have the knowledge of good and evil. And that was enticing to Eve. Something about what he said there. You shall be like God. And you know what's curious about that? They already were. Adam and Eve were already like God. That's how they were created. If you remember the story of when he made them, this is what we read. God said, let us make humankind in our image according to our likeness. Adam and Eve were already like God. And now Satan kind of brings that back. If you eat this, you'll be like God. They already were. They already were like God. But in some way, that was a temptation for Eve as she listened to him and looked at the tree. And you will know good and evil. You'll have the knowledge of good and evil. We spoke real briefly on this last week. The tree of knowledge of good and evil is not bad. It's a good thing. That tree was set there for a purpose. And the purpose was the people would know good and evil. And how they would know it is by obeying God. Don't eat of the tree. I'm setting the boundaries. You got all this stuff. All this cool stuff. All this stuff you can freely do except for that. That's the boundary. That is the limitation. And if you obey, you will now know good and evil because you know I am the one that says what's right and wrong. And when you obey that, you now know good and evil. That's how the tree was supposed to function. The tree by itself was not bad. Obey God's command and stay away from it and you will know good and evil. So they would have had both things that Satan was tempting them with. And we go on here in verse 6. So when the woman catches this about the tree, you know, the tree's not bad. She saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise. She took of its fruit, ate, and when she also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate. You know, that dress was just her size. It was just a fit. It was appealing to the eye. And she tried it on and she wrote the check. Probably knew it was wrong for some. There was a limitation set, but she saw and she did, just like Eve did. Delight to the eye. It was good to look at. It was good. It was good for food. The food that was on the tree was good for food. And it was desired to make one wise. And so she partook things that she already had. But what she did was she disobeyed. You know, there's a great parallel, I think, for the way we live our lives today. You and I are bombarded by so many things. A lot of them are good. A lot of them not so good. And I think you and I'll speak just for myself. I see a lot of things that are a delight to my eyes. They are good to look at. And I think there are things that can give my body physical satisfaction, that can make me feel good. A lot of things in the world that can make me feel good. And there are things that are a drive to make me wise. Perhaps, you know, intelligence or academic achievements. A lot of things in our world that are that way. But the deal is, if they have been determined to be a prohibition, then that is exactly what they are, and they are not good, and they are to be avoided. And that's the difference. That is the thing that we need to always be aware of here. Things can have an appeal. Things can look good. But if there is a prohibition set in place by God, it's our job as His followers to obey. So when they succumbed to their temptation, they did just that. They chose to disobey. And what the serpent did not do is he didn't force them. He did not put a gun to Adam's head. He didn't shove them in the door. He didn't make them sign the check. There was no forcing there. It was done, and it was done by their choice. But when they did that, this is the key here that's got us all in the predicament we are. They submitted themselves at that point to the serpent and the authority of Satan. They gave up their submission to their Creator God, and they gave it over to the serpent and to the forces of Satan. He now becomes the ruler of the world. At that point, man was supposed to be the ruler of the world. They would have dominion over all of the world. But at that point, when human beings gave over to him, that's when the problem arose. We were supposed to have that. And because of that, mysteriously, all humans ever born after that, you and I included, were under his authority. He is the ruler, the devil of this world. That's the predicament we were in. The first takeaway from that to me is back to Christmas. That is what Christ came to fix. That was the purpose of his coming as a boy in a manger, humbly poor. For that reason, to get all of humankind out of this mess that we were in because of what we all did, essentially, in Eden. Through the cross, he won back what the devil had stolen. That is the great victory that followers of Christ celebrate. That's what we celebrated over Christmas. That's what makes the gift so good. And I think that's the reason that we ought to live that joy of Christmas out daily. We need to constantly and continuously reflect how much he has done for us. Because I think the further we grow in our faith, the more we understand what he really did, because how far it was that we had to come. Because we were dead. The bottom line, we weren't in bad shape. You and I were dead. The wages of sin is death, the Bible teaches. We're dead. We're separated from him, spiritually separated from him, physically. We were doomed, and we were lost. But in him, because of that cross, verified by that empty tomb, we're brought close again. And we have security with him. And we have real, real life here and now. And that's what we should celebrate. That is the joy that people ought to walk down the street and say, there's a follower of Christ. Because they get it. They have that joy. They see how much that we really have received in that first Christmas. It ought to be evident in our lives. That is the first thing we ought to take away from this, that we understand how awesome that gift really is. The second takeaway we'll spend this week and the rest of next talking about requires that we got to go back to the garden and delve a little bit more deeply into those moments and consider a little bit about what happened there and think a little bit about the nature of Adam and Eve and why they did what they did and how that relates to our nature today. So you think about all those trees. I know it was more than that. I think last week we talked about some of those trees probably tasted like biscuits and gravy and other ones tasted like hot wings and, you know, they better than that. You know what was there. God made it. You know, it was just awesome. And there were options and there was freedom, liberty to do all kinds of good because that's all that was there. That's all that was there before Genesis 3 was just good. And not eating of that one tree in itself was good as well. Because that was us obeying. But we couldn't stay there. We had this desire for something else. And when the choice was made to eat from that tree, what's really being said there, what Adam and Eve were saying was, I am going to decide for myself what is right and wrong and what is beautiful. And that's exactly what Eve did, and that's exactly what Adam did. And in there is such a powerful statement that got them in trouble. It got all of humankind in trouble. And I believe it still gets us in trouble today. Because those people who are not in Christ, people who are far from God, are determining for themselves what's right and wrong. They're choosing to eat from that tree. They're choosing to be their own God. But even for us who are followers of Christ, even those of us that call ourselves Christians, we still wrestle with the same temptations that other people have. We're still secure. We're still safe. We're saved from death. I mean, that's done. That is a one and done thing. We're still there. But we're still tempted to disobey the boundaries that God has put in place. All of us. And when we fail, and we probably will fail, we're still safe, and we're still loved, and we're still at one with Him. What happens, though, is when we are disobedient to the boundaries that are set up, that will affect the quality of the life that we have here. And it also affects what we can do in His kingdom to participate in what He has started. The consequences that we have when we mess up keeps us from living a life that is abundant. That's what we're promised. I came to give life and that you would have it abundantly. As followers of Christ, we're not supposed to be, you know, moping around and have a scowl on our face all the time. It's an abundant life Jesus promised us. But when we fail, that is affected. We're kept from that. And it keeps us from doing exactly what it is we're supposed to be doing here and now for Him. A lot of examples of this. I want to bring this into something that is a little practical for our time. And there's several of these examples that I want to talk about. We'll do some more next week as well. But first one I want to talk about, I thought was an easy one to talk about, is gossiping. Consider gossiping. You know, and gossiping usually is done in a slanderous way. It's done for the purpose to knock somebody down. And you think about that. Look, many of us are guilty of gossiping. Usually it starts off this way. We want to put some preface on what I'm about to say that's somehow going to make it right. And we'll say, nah, I don't want to gossip, but, right? You ever hear anybody that? I don't want to be gossiping. You know, next time somebody does that to you, say, just, well, stop then. You know, let's just stop and just be real careful what you say next. Because in some way we think, if I say that first, I don't want to be gossiping. Then we have some, you know, blanket statement that allows us to gossip for the next 20 minutes. No, it is still gossiping. We still do this. There is this thing about us that wants us to say things about other people that puts them down. But the Bible's pretty clear about speaking about people in a way that would be negative or to put them down. One of the instances that I have here comes from Paul writing in the book of Colossians. And he's talking about you new believers, you know, you're a new believer, but you still have these other stuff about you that you need to work at putting away. And he says this, "Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature. Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived. But now you must rid yourselves of all things as these, anger, rage, and here it is, malice, and slander, and filthy language from your lips." When we gossip, we're saying things to put others down for the purpose of elevating ourselves. Now, I started off easy. Oh, yeah, I started off easy. You talk about gossip. That's not one of the really bad ones. But look at the category Paul puts that in there. To be able to talk about someone in a slanderous way or a malicious way is in the same category as sexual immorality and lust and greed. And it is spoken about very, very negatively. But as Christians, we still struggle with it. I don't mean to gossip, but let me tell you about Mrs. Jones, who just got fired from her job because they were saying that she was being too flirty. You know, for what purpose? For what purpose? You're trying to put Mrs. Jones down there so that I am elevated. And so think about that tree. As Eve looked at that tree, she looked at it and she said, you know, it's good for food. It's pleasing to the eyes. And it's to be desired to make one wise. Well, good for food. It's something that benefits me. And when I think about benefiting, you know, God, there is a benefit to me gossiping because that does make me a little better than somebody else. It elevates me. And I might think that that is something that is good. It's good for my eyes because now I see myself in a higher light because of what I've done. I put somebody else down that puts me up here. And I'm wiser than somebody else because I didn't get myself in the predicament that Mrs. Jones did. You see the parallel? It's the same kind of thing that Eve was having to go to and go through as well. And what's similar for us as well, you and I have been given a command to not do that. Do not speak negatively about people that way. We're not to do that. That is our boundary. Just as Adam and Eve have the boundary in the garden, we have that boundary as well. So when we decide, well, I don't mean to gossip, but here I go again, you are essentially saying, with God's command, and I'm going to do it this way anyways. I am going to choose what's right and wrong, and I think that gossiping is right. Boy, that's a danger. That is a danger because we now are choosing what we think is right and wrong and not what God has told us is right and wrong. Another one to think about that's an easy one here that's such a parallel to Adam and Eve and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We just read, put to death, therefore, Paul says, put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, and lust. Let's think about lust for just a minute, specifically about pornography. You know, Jesus says about lust. He says this, you know, you have heard, do not commit adultery. And that's true, that's in the law. But I tell you that anyone that looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Remember him saying that? That talks to us about what the Bible, what the boundary is regarding lust. But you think about our culture and what pornography is doing to our culture and the astronomical number of people that regularly use pornography. And what's even scarier is when you think about the number of people that use that are within the church and are clergy. Scary, very scary statistics. But think about that. She looked at the tree and saw it was good for food and pleasing to the eyes. Well, that's kind of the whole deal about what that whole industry is about. It's about visually looking at something for personal satisfaction, to get some sort of fulfillment out of life. But that's not what was intended. That's not how God has set that part of our lives up. We don't use people as objects in that way. So when we are tempted by that and give into that, we are essentially not just disobeying, but we are dethroning God to choose to be our own God, because we are doing exactly what Adam and Eve did. You put this boundary up, but I'm going to say this is the boundary. You are no longer on your throne. We can continue to talk about other things, greed and substance abuse, and the list goes on and on. We are going to talk some more about these next week. But I think at the very essence of this, to me, so much of our world's problems find their core right here, right in the problem of what this temptation was with the tree then, and the same temptations that we have here and now. How is it that we handle the things that God has talked to us about and commanded us, and what are we doing with those kinds of things? And you know, there's still lots of freedoms there. We're not talking about issues that don't have moral consequences. There's football games on this afternoon, and we can argue which team is better than the other team. Those are not the kind of issues that we're talking about. We're talking about the ones that God has deemed morally right and morally wrong, and those things that have been prescribed to us. And I think if you look at most of the issues, you flip on the news, you read the newspaper, and you see what's going on, I think the heart of those problems, most of those boil down to us messing up with the moral laws that God has given us. How do we decide? Do we decide as a people what is right and wrong, or do we obey what God has commanded? There is the very heart of so much of the problems we have in the world. And I think, too, it's part of the problem within the church, the universal church, the body of Christ throughout the world. I think we can measure the effectiveness of the church against how we're dealing with the moral issues of the day. I think perhaps that's why our church in a lot of areas in our country are weak. Specifically, that fits really well with the United Methodist Church right now. I think this church's denomination is so weak right now because we are not dealing correctly with the moral issue at hand within the church. It's Genesis 3. It's a tree. It's a commandment. It's a group of people that says, this is what's right and wrong. There is the heart of our problem. And I think you and I, personally, we're saved. We are saved from the consequences of those wrong decisions when we blow it on the issues that you and I have personally in individual. We're right. We've been made right by that cross. And we should celebrate that every day. But I think you and I need to constantly be aware of how these battles are still going on. That same battle that happened with a couple in a tree in a garden. And I think we constantly need to go back and find out what is right and what is wrong. And how do I determine that? Do I obey, or do I get to decide what's right and wrong? Let's pray.